Welcome to another edition of WFAE Talks, our new podcast. I believe this is the 9th edition. Joining me is Ben Bradford, who covers energy, the environment, and anything else he's assigned. That's your official title.
I appreciate that, yeah.
And Lisa Miller, our education reporter, who's gearing up for the North American Handmade Bicycle Association.
Well, I am not going to this, but I'm looking forward to hearing Duncan's report on it, who is going tomorrow. And
it's Duncan McFadden, one of our other reporters.
Indeed, indeed. So I urged him to take up one of those CHS bike share bikes up to the convention and see what kind of a reception that gets. So we'll see if that happens.
That it gets from all the people who are up there with their own handmade bikes.
Yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes.
And Duncan's a prolific user of the bikes.
The bike share
system. So he's a perfect person to be doing this story and seeing what they think of the quality of these bikes. But y'all missed my pun. Gear up. Did you catch that?
Yeah, that was good.
I missed it. And now it hurts a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. What are we talking about on today's show, Greg? What are we talking about?
Steve Smith. Carolina Panthers legend is let go. We'll talk immigration and students who have been here, who came here to this country illegally with their parents years ago, the challenges they face in getting into college. And we're also going to discuss solar energy, something we're going to ask you about, Ben.
Sure. Happy to talk about it.
First, Steve Smith is gone. There are a lot of Steve Smith stories. Or paper today, there's stuff about Steve Smith through the years, and of course, had a lot of big catches. Great receiver over the years. Also, as you were just saying, a
fiery guy.
I have a Steve Smith locker room story.
Excellent.
And it goes back from 2008. Oh. It shows that you should never throw away great audio or never delete it. Because it's coming, the benefits of it are today. And years ago, it's 2008 season, Panthers are doing well. I was helping Scott Graff, former Morning Edition host here, work on a story about NFL starting to crack down on helmet-to-helmet hits. So I went down there, interviewed some players to help Scott with his story. And I was not talking to Steve Smith. I forget. I think I might have been talking to Jake Delhomme. But anyway, in the background, there's quarterback Josh McCown, who's now just signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, has been with the Chicago Bears. He was a backup, and Steve Smith went up behind him and did this to him. See if you could guess what he did.
Shut it down. Ah! Daddy! Ah! Crap! That hurt!
Oh, no.
Did he whip him with the towel? Is that what I'm hearing?
No,
that
it isn't.
That is Steve Smith giving Josh McCown a purple nurple.
Oof.
And Josh McCown was he was in legitimate pain, and he went up. I mean, his nipple was twisted like you wouldn't believe by Steve Smith. And
wow.
I still have that image in my head, and I had to save that audio, and today I get to use it.
Lasting memories of Steve Smith from WFAE, the purple nurple from 2008. Wonderful.
I guarantee Josh McCown remembers it.
I'm sure he does. Go ahead. Yeah, you're going to ask about the signing, right? Or about the cut, about cutting him. What do you think about it?
I think it's a great move.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Explain.
Well, I think he's I think Steve Smith's best days are behind him. I think he's a good receiver. As a fan, I'm not convinced that he would accept being in a number two or diminished role. And that's understandable because he's been the number one guy here for so long, and it's tough being demoted like that. If they were going to demote him, I'm assuming they were, if he stayed around, I think it'd be hard to take. So it's best to let him go and move on to another team where maybe being the number two guy wouldn't be such a bad thing. That's just my perspective as a fan. I'm certainly not in the loop as a journalist in this matter.
Right. Okay. And I completely disagree with you. I'm a 49ers fan. I'm from San Francisco. But in terms of looking at the numbers, in terms of looking at what Steve Smith did, you look at last season, right? I don't think he's washed up. You look at his other receivers were Brandon LaFell and Ted Ginn, two guys who haven't really stepped up. You know, Ted Ginn, I know from when he was his time with the 49ers. Before that, he was with the Miami Dolphins. He's a former first-round pick who's a very good electric punt returner and kick returner, but never really panned out as a wide receiver. And he was the third best receiver on the team last year. Steve Smith still got over 700 yards passing last year, and I understand those aren't eyebrow raising numbers, but you have to also understand that the Carolina Panthers had the third least number of pass attempts in the league last year. By the way, the two below that, Seattle Seahawks and San Francisco 49ers. But the point is that Steve Smith, with no other targets, was still the leading receiver on the team, still had tough catches, and even with a limited number of attempts, still produced pretty well. Now, with that said, you cut him, and the Panthers are still paying $5 million. That's the cap hit, right? So you've got a limited number of cap space. You got a limited amount of cap space. It's what, somewhere between $120, $130 million this year. $5 million against the cap, but it would have only been $7 million otherwise. So you got to ask yourself, is $2 million worth, is Steve Smith worth $2 million?
Is he holding other players back?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. And I think if they're going to draft a wide receiver, first of all, yes, you do want mentors on there. I don't know about the internal locker room dynamics, but first, receiver is one of those positions. Receiver and quarterback really are probably the two positions that have the longest learning curve in the NFL. It takes receivers, you know, the kind of going lore is about 3 years.
And maybe the largest egos too.
Well, that's possible. That's possible. Like I said, I'm a 49er fan. Know a lot about wide receivers and egos. But I think that, you know, I don't know who they're going to immediately be able to replace him with. Obviously, it's a deep draft in terms of receivers, but does it make sense to get rid of a guy who is still a legitimate receiving threat to save $2 million, and you're left with really a bare cupboard?
Can we replace him with the refrigerator?
Lisa likes to talk about the refrigerator just in general.
Why? I don't get it.
He seemed like he was tough.
you mean the refrigerator Perry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like, okay, that's years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There.
Oh, is he not around anymore?
He's not around. Playing. It's been a while. It's been a while. Yeah.
When did he stop playing? Like a decade ago? More than that?
Oh, longer than that.
2 decades, something like that?
Yeah. Well, you obviously came ready for battle.
I just want
to talk about Purple Nurple.
I'm ready to go.
I go by the eye test, I guess, and he's a good receiver. I didn't say he's washed up. I'm just saying time to move on sometimes.
You know, in 2005, Chase Stewart of Chase Stewart from Football Perspective says that Smith had one of the greatest receiving seasons in history. He did something that only two other receivers have done since 1970, Sterling Sharp and Jerry Rice. And what that is that he had the most receiving yards, the most touchdowns, and the most receptions. All right. And
are you reading that?
Jerry
off
Rice.
Nine years ago.
Chase Stewart over there. The point is that he had Jake Delhomme thrown to him as opposed to Joe Montana or Steve Young,
sure,
or Brett Favre, which is who the other two guys had going for him. Now, if you look at his seasons, he's been, other than last year where he dropped off by a couple hundred yards, he's been incredibly consistent, except for a few seasons.
He's been well compensated for that consistency.
Oh yeah, I'm not arguing about that. I'm just saying that you look at how much you're saving. You're saving $2 million, and the Panthers, no question, are one of the most cap strapped teams in the league. But
I don't think they did it for cap reasons.
You think it's a locker room thing?
I think it's. I don't know if it's as much a locker room, but maybe it's. Personally, I don't think he's as good as he used to be. I mean, I think he's still a really good quarterback. I mean, a really good receiver. I just don't think he's top of the line like many people regard him anymore. And they're paying him that top of the line money. And I think he's more of a number two. And he's a solid contributor. He's a solid receiver in the NFL. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, that'll be some. That'll be some bulletin board fodder for Steve Smith.
Yes, it will. Yeah. It's inspired by WFAE Talks.
There you go, WFAE Talks Sports.
Maybe inspired.
So people come to public radio.
Yes, exactly.
To hear our in-depth analysis of sports.
And Steve Smith giving Josh McCown a purple nurple.
There you go, exactly.
Well, let's move on to more important matters. Lisa, you had a really interesting story this week about students, many on deferred status. These are students who entered the country legally with their parents years ago, and they've been raised American, all intents and purposes. Even though they're not citizens, they're Americans. But They are kind of just caught in the middle of this whole immigration debate. And when it comes time to go to college, their options are limited. And now some small private schools in the region are reaching out to these students, at least the top students.
Sure. I mean, if you're in the country illegally, you know, if you came over with a parent when you were a kid, or, you know, there's a what's called deferred status now. You can apply for this status, which, you know, allows you to work legally, but there's still a lot of barriers to what you can do. But the top students have a good shot at going to college. It's not just about getting into college, but it's about getting a really sizable scholarship because, you know, for these students, even if they have deferred status, federal loans are off the table for them. And I mean, federal loans are how, you know, a lot of students get through college. And so they really have to get a big scholarship to go. And a lot of them are, you know, looking at private colleges because at least in North Carolina and South Carolina, well, let me take North Carolina first. They can, you know, enroll in North Carolina colleges, but they're paying out-of-state tuition. So, you know, that's a good chunk more. Mm-hmm. Now, in South Carolina is one of the states where students in these categories aren't even allowed to enroll at the schools. So private schools, you know, there's a couple in the area that have been reaching out to them. Johnson C. Smith in Charlotte, a historically black school, and Wingate in Union County.
Wingate.
Yeah, Wingate, I was wondering.
I know.
They're trying to call it Wingate, and so I called it Wingate in the story. But, you know, I thought there's going to be so many people out there who think I'm saying it wrong. But anyway.
The president of the school calls it Wingate, though, still. But anyway, that's not what this story is about.
No, it's not. But these two schools have been really reaching out to these students. It's not that they change their sort of evaluation of what qualifies for a merit scholarship or a need-based scholarship. But, you know, it's inviting these kids on campus and saying, hey, you know, we want to kind of like work with you through the application process. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a top student, you can go to college. I mean, it's
you get a pretty
good scholarship, or you can, you know, work your way through a little bit of college. But, you know, it's sort of the kids in the average kids, you know, what happens to them? And I talked with a woman at the Latin American Coalition who counsels a lot of these kids, Megan Walsh. And she said basically their route is to go to community college. And, you know, hope to transfer to a four-year college. But again, when you go to community college, you're still paying out-of-state rates. So, you know, at CPCC, for example, a credit hour costs $60, but out-of-state, it would be something like $260.
Well, it's an issue that's certainly going to continue. On to the final topic today, solar energy. It looked like there was going to be a big solar farm at the Charlotte Douglas Airport, but no longer the case. You broke the story, Ben.
Yeah, well, so we reported in November of last year about city officials proposing this very large, a 53-megawatt solar farm at the airport. And just sort of how that stacks up, a 300 megawatts would be sort of your kind of a small, but, you know, or like relatively you know, kind of a large scale coal plant kind of on the small end of that. So 53 megawatts, though, for solar is a lot. Most of the ones in the state, most of the farms in the state are under 5 megawatts for a variety of reasons that aren't really worth getting into right here. So this is a major proposal. And the most that the city's ever done before is an installation that's 200 times smaller than one that proposed the airport. So this
Where
is a big
that?
Jump for them. That is actually on the roof of the CLT center at the airport. So they have a small installation on the roof of this one building, this one office building on the airport grounds. But otherwise, and they have some other you know, small solar projects, you know, here and there. But this was a major, major jump up. And what they're talking about doing was putting solar panels along the roofs of parking decks and parking lots and putting them in the strips of land between airfields and so forth. And they did this request for proposals for asking developers who were interested to submit their bid for how they would do this, how much it would cost, and you know, and so forth. And they kept it relatively loose intentionally, I think, to one, because I think that they don't have a ton of experience in this area and they wanted to use it as a learning experience, and two, because they wanted to give a good amount of creativity to the developers and how they could do it and see what ideas cropped up. Well, anyway, we got word. I checked in with the airport about this and asked, hey, so how's this going? You guys are supposed to have gotten your proposals. Where is it? And I got word back, oh, wait, no. A month ago, we actually changed the contract, and they didn't send out any kind of notice on this other than to the developers who'd gotten the proposal. And actually, I thought I was on that list as well, but that's another matter. And it just said that there had been, as they'd continued to review it, there had been some problems that had cropped up, and they were going to withdraw it. And they're still interested in doing it, but they anticipate that, but don't guarantee that they'll kind of restart this process next year. But here's the thing. These solar panels on the roofs and on parking decks and things like that, they can't do those, is what they found out.
Oh, why is that?
Because essentially there are pre-existing bonds that make the airport took out to pay for the parking decks, and they're tax exempt bonds, so they don't pay taxes on them. But if they were to start putting solar panels on there, they would be selling that energy into the grid, to selling it to Duke Energy.
Hmm.
And if they did that, then the terms of the bond would be violated. They would no longer be tax exempt. They'd have to start paying taxes on it. That changes the whole revenue model.
Wow.
Be a big problem. That was 80% of the solar panels that they were proposing.
Oh.
So that was a major, major part of it. So they can't aren't going to do that part. The ones on the in-between airfield strips, there's this plan that the airport's initiating to look at kind of just how the airfield itself operates and how they might want to kind of rejigger that to be able to accommodate more flights and run a little more efficiently and those kind of things. And they said, well, if we do that, we might have to tear up these solar panels and move them back down again. So there's no point in getting this process started right now. So that's what they said. You know, I don't know how much they when I asked, they hadn't done any kind of plans on this stuff before they issued the proposal. So these were issues that really came up after they'd already solicited developers on it.
I'm seeing these proposals for solar farms crop up now across the state, and they seem to be a little bit more controversial at times. I know there's one in Lincoln County that was defeated. Our commissioners voted down one, and it's still, I think,
it's not the only one
debate,
either. Right, yeah, it's not the only one either. Solar farms are kind of an interesting I think that there's a lot of kind of any kind of sentiment when you have development, particularly a development that's going to be across acres and acres of land, and particularly when you haven't seen it before, which is communities go, whoa, 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 we want to know more about this, or maybe they don't want it, period. What's the benefit for us going to be? And so you get a number of different complaints. You know, one is just on the grounds of what is it going to do to property values, and sometimes there's complaints that, oh, we worry this is going to drop our property values. I haven't seen any studies that really confirm that, you know, across a I'm sure there are individual projects where that has happened, as in with any kind of development.
Sure.
But I haven't seen anything that shows that to be an actual, you know, real.
Green energy is really in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? You see.
Well, I think that it's pretty clear that solar energy is.
I mean, pretty renewable.
Yeah, as far as what your definition of, I don't mean that, but just people, what is, you know, if it's different types of pollution, if they think it's ugly, or there's nothing,
no fuel source that we have, period. And this is, and you're absolutely right, this is a great example of it, that these projects getting rejected, there is no way of doing energy that does not upset some people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is absolutely a good example of that. Now, with that said, North Carolina has been doing a lot of solar. There's sort of this interesting balance between, you know, one of the statistics that I always cite is that Duke Energy, who's obviously the major utility in North Carolina, has a relatively small solar footprint. So they are projecting, you know, right now without being too complicated, basically you're talking low single digits for Duke Energy utilities that give us our power using solar. And 15 years from now, they project that it'll be low single digits. So they're not projecting a whole lot of increase in that area. Now, that might change, but in the last plan that they submitted, looking 15 years out, they're saying low single digits percentage. Now, in terms of the solar as a business and selling it to other industries, Duke's been involved in that with other parts of their business that aren't the utilities. And other developers throughout the state have been building a lot. And so North Carolina was recently ranked number two in the nation next to California, who obviously is a little bit bigger than us, ranked second in the nation for the amount of solar that North Carolina built in last year, in 2013.
Well, we wrapped up another one. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.